This episode's audio was generated using AI technology.
Imagine standing on the floor of a fully automated factory. Like the robotic arms are swinging around, sparks are flying everywhere, products are just rolling off the assembly line at this blistering pace. But you notice something kind of eerie.
Right, there are no lights on.
Exactly, no lights. It's what they call a dark factory,
yeah.
You know, operating entirely without human intervention. Now, translate that concept over to software. Imagine shipping an internal beta product. And we're talking about a 1 million line code base here, generating thousands of pull requests over 5 months.
And the crucial part here is doing all of that with zero human written code. I mean, not a single line typed by a developer.
Wow.
Yeah, and even more radical, zero human code reviews before those branches actually hit the main repository. It is a completely dark software factory.
Welcome to another episode of Kernel Panic. Today, we are taking you inside the architecture that makes this seemingly, well, reckless level of automation actually function in a production environment.
It really does sound reckless at first.
It does. We are unpacking OpenAI's newly open-sourced Symfony framework today. We're also pulling some insights from the Composio HQ GitHub discussions on agent orchestrators and digging into a really fascinating masterclass interview with Ryan Lapopolo from OpenAI's Frontier team.
Yeah, the goal today is to really explore how the concept of harness engineering and, believe it or not, Erlang-based orchestration are shifting the fundamental bottleneck of our industry. Like, we are moving from typing syntax to managing project state.
Right. So if you are an infrastructure engineer trying to optimize your CI/CD pipelines, or, you know, just a developer trying to figure out how autonomous agents ship code without completely taking down your production environment, we're going to look under the hood at the exact architecture, the tooling, and obviously the inevitable failure modes of this new paradigm.
Because there are always failure modes, but to really grasp the tools that emerged, we have to look at the extreme constraints that basically forced their creation. This all really started with that five-month experiment led by OpenAI's Frontier team.
Right. The one where they deliberately banned humans from writing code.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, that sounds like absolute torture for a team of software engineers. Ryan Lapopolo literally refused to write code himself. The agent had to do the job end to end.
Yeah, they really committed to the bit. And what they realized early on was that they had to stop doing what most of the industry is currently obsessed with, which is prompt engineering.
Okay, so prompt engineering is out.
Pretty much. The shift to what they call harness engineering is subtle, but it's totally vital. When an agent failed or, you know, got stuck in a loop, the engineering team didn't just sit there tweaking the prompt.
Like telling the model to try harder or think step by step.
Right, exactly. Take a deep breath and write this Python script. They didn't do that. They stepped back, looked at the system environment, and asked, what capability, context, or structure is actually missing here?
Interesting.
They treated the AI like a factory worker who's missing a specialized wrench rather than a student who just misunderstood a math question.
I like that. It sounds like we've spent the last 2 years trying to breed a faster horse, right? Like tweaking prompts to make the AI just a little bit smarter. But harness engineering is about paving a smooth asphalt road. You're building the tracks. You're not constantly trying to upgrade the engine.
That's a great way to put it. And one of the biggest potholes on that road initially was the build system. The team mandated a strict 1 minute inner build loop.
A 1 minute build loop.
Yeah, they obsessed over it. They retooled the entire build system constantly. I mean, they moved from standard makefiles to Bazel to Turbo to NX.
Just ripping and replacing build teams.
Exactly. They were actively implementing tools that build dependency graphs and aggressively cache intermediate artifacts, all to ensure that when an agent touches like one specific module, only that specific module rebuilds.
Wait, hold on though. Why the obsession with a 1 minute build? I mean, human developers hate waiting for builds because we get distracted, right? We switch to Slack, we lose our train of thought, we go get coffee. But a machine has infinite patience. Why does an AI care if a build takes 10 minutes?
Well, it comes down to how these specific agents operate concurrently. And honestly, the raw cost of stalling.
Okay, the money.
Always the money. Mm. With the introduction of background shells, the model became capable of spawning commands and then continuing to work while waiting for standard output.
Right.
But if the outer build loop takes, say, 12 minutes, the Aegis workflow just stalls entirely. And more importantly, when you are generating a billion tokens a day.
A billion.
Yeah, a billion. Which is roughly $2,000 to $3,000 in pure token spend every day. You are operating at an insane level of parallelism. So if the build is slow, the agent times out, or it just loses the thread of its limited context window.
Oh, because the context window is filling up with waiting states and garbage logs.
Exactly. Keeping that inner loop under a minute forces rigorous code-based discipline. It physically prevents the system from generating these sprawling, untestable monoliths because the agent will literally fail out before it can finish compiling them.
That makes a lot of sense. And that exposes the real bottleneck of the entire operation, doesn't it? It wasn't token limits, and it wasn't even compute power. It was human attention.
Oh, 100%.
Because if you have an AI churning out 1,500 pull requests, human attention becomes the ultimate scarce resource. You simply can't have a human sit there and review every single line of a million-line code base generated at warp speed.
Right. The paradox there is that if you automate the coding part, but you leave the code review to humans, you haven't actually solved the bottleneck at all.
You've just moved it.
You've just moved it further down the pipeline, yeah. You have to remove the human from the loop entirely until the very end.
So if human review is the bottleneck, and you have hundreds of agents generating code at warp speed, you can't just have developers babysitting a dozen terminal windows, right?
Yeah.
Manually copying and pasting context back and forth.
No, that breaks down immediately.
You need an automated traffic cop that can handle massive concurrency. And that's the exact problem OpenAI built Symfony to solve. Symfony is their open source reference implementation for autonomous agent orchestration. But, and I have to bring this up, looking at the architecture, the tech stack is baffling at first glance.
It really is a curveball.
In a world completely dominated by Python scripts and TypeScript AI wrappers, they chose to build Symfony in Elixir.
Yep.
A language running on the Erlang Beam runtime.
Yep.
I mean, that feels like a blast from the telecom past. Why Erlang?
Well, because managing hundreds of isolated agent work trees concurrently isn't really a machine learning problem.
Okay.
It is fundamentally a high concurrency systems problem. And Erlang and Elixir, they run on the OTP, the Open Telecom platform. This architecture was designed decades ago for like telephone switches that could never, ever go down.
The legendary nine nines of reliability, right?
Exactly. Erlang gives you process level fault tolerance out of the box through what are called supervision trees.
Supervision trees.
Right, because when you have hundreds of autonomous agents running concurrently, they are going to crash. I mean, it's inevitable. They will hit API rate limits. They will write bad syntax that canicks the compiler. They'll exhaust their memory.
It just break things.
All the time. But in Symfony, every agent runs as an ultra-lightweight, isolated process. So if an agent process crashes mid-execution, the Beam runtime transparently restarts that specific process with its error context intact.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it totally isolates the failure. It doesn't cascade and bring down the entire orchestrator.
So the Erlang Beam runtime is essentially acting like a bowling lane with the bumpers up. Even if the agent throws a gutter ball and completely crashes its local environment, the runtime just resets the pins and hands the ball back without, you know, shutting down the whole bowling alley.
That is a perfect analogy. And the other massive architectural shift here is what they call the control plane pattern.
What's that?
So before Symfony, developers were managing this chaos through CLI wrappers, basically just chatting with the AI in a terminal.
Right, standard stuff.
But Symfony uses an issue tracker, specifically linear in the reference implementation, as its actual state machine.
Wait, so the AI isn't waiting for a human prompt in a terminal. It is literally just reading the Kanban board.
Exactly. Symfony operates as a persistent, invisible daemon on your server. It just constantly pulls the linear board, looks for tickets in a specific state like, maybe ready for agent, and it just auto-claims them.
That's wild.
Then it isolates a local workspace on the disk and runs Codex as a subprocess. And the key here is it doesn't do this by scraping text from the terminal, which is incredibly brittle. It uses a JSON RPC app server protocol.
Okay, meaning instead of relying on parsing raw strings from standard output to figure out what the agent is doing, the agent and the orchestrator are passing neatly structured data packets back and forth natively.
Precisely. It streams structured events directly back to the orchestrator. If the agent needs to run a test, it sends a JSON payload requesting test execution, and the orchestrator hands back the structured results. It's totally deterministic.
Okay, so the orchestrator can spin up these agents reliably, and thanks to Elixir, A rogue agent won't crash the host machine. But we are talking about safely deploying this across different repositories. And every repo in an organization has vastly different coding standards, different linters, different architectural patterns.
Oh, yeah, it's a mess.
How do you manage that without hard coding a massive amount of custom, brittle logic into the orchestrator itself?
The solution they implemented is brilliant because it pushes the configuration down to the repo level. They introduced this file called Workflow WWMD. And honestly, this is arguably Symfony's killer feature.
Workflow WWMD. This sounds essentially like a Docker file for AI behavior.
That is exactly what it is. It is a single file living right in the root of the repository. It contains YAML configuration at the top and what's called a liquid compatible prompt template at the bottom.
Liquid templates.
Yeah, they allow the system to dynamically inject context like the specific ticket details from Linear or the current Git branch name straight into the instructions at runtime. The file defines the agent's primary system instructions, the runtime constraints, and the exact rules for how the agent should format its code for that specific code base.
And the beauty there is that because it lives in the repository, you are version controlling the agent's actual brain right alongside the code it's writing.
Yes.
Because think about your own code base right now. If you asked an autonomous agent to fix a bug in a legacy branch from 2 years ago, it would probably try to use today's linting rules or import modern libraries that didn't even exist back then.
And the build would instantly fail.
Exactly.
Versioning the agent solves that massive temporal problem. When an agent checks out a branch from 2 weeks ago to fix a bug, it uses the workflow.md file from 2 weeks ago.
That's so smart.
The agent adopts the exact rules, prompt constraints, and architectural context that existed at that exact moment in time. You aren't applying today's agent logic to yesterday's code base.
That is incredibly elegant. And it defines a strict, isolated environment, too, yeah. Right? Because giving an autonomous agent free reign over your file system sounds like a total disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, nobody wants that. Every single Linear issue gets its own completely isolated Git work tree clone. The agent is entirely sandboxed.
Right.
By default, it runs with network none, so it cannot reach out to the open internet to download random dependencies, and it is strictly crewed to its workspace path.
Okay, but then, before it is allowed to transition that Linear issue to a human review state, I understand it must deliver what OpenAI calls proof of work. How does that actually function in a sandboxed environment? I mean, it can't just leave a comment saying, hey, I wrote the code, trust me, it works.
Right, trust me, bro, doesn't fly in production. Proof of work is basically a cryptographic level guarantee for software reliability. The agent must pass the entire CI pipeline locally. It has to pass all unit tests. It must even address simulated PR review feedback.
Simulated feedback.
Yeah, an LLM acting as a reviewer critiques it first. And remarkably, it generates a walkthrough video of the UI changes.
Wait, an actual video? How?
Because it's sandboxed, it invokes a local test runner, like Playwright, which spins up a headless browser within that isolated environment. It executes the UI interactions, records the DOM state to an MP4 file, and attaches that video directly to the pull request.
That is insane.
Only when all of those deterministic checks pass does a human engineer even get a notification.
Okay, but what happens when an agent inevitably gets stuck in a loop? We've all seen large language models confidently go down a rabbit hole of entirely hallucinated code,
yeah.
You know, trying the same broken fix over and over again. Does Symfony just let it spin forever, racking up API charges?
No, this is where Symfony's entropy management kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
So Erlang manages the process lifecycle, like we talked about, but Symfony implements bounded retries with exponential backoff.
Mm.
If an agent fails a build step or exceeds its stall timeout, the orchestrator kills the underlying process entirely. Just wipes it out. It cleans up the state, transitions the ticket internally, and queues a clean retry.
But what if it keeps failing?
If the agent fails repeatedly and hits the hard maximum retry cap, Symfony gracefully degrades. The issue is transitioned to a released state in Linear, which explicitly hands the ticket back to the human engineering team.
Got it. So it mathematically bounds the failure.
Exactly.
Now, Symfony is highly opinionated, right?
Right.
It is strictly constrained. It forces you to use Linear. It relies on Elixir. But it isn't the only way to ship code autonomously. The ecosystem is basically exploding right now.
Right.
Let's look at how Symfony compares to the rest of the landscape, specifically looking at the Composio HQ discussions.
Yeah. When you look at the competitive landscape, there are a few distinct philosophies emerging right now. You have Symfony. You have AO, which stands for Agent Orchestrator, and you have tools like T3 Code.
Okay, so how do they differ?
Well, Symfony and AO both aim for that automated fire and forget pipeline, right? Where you put an issue in and you get a pull request out. but they handle failure very differently.
How so?
Symfony is highly destructive on rework. If a human eventually reviews the PR and requests structural changes, or if the system fails a late-stage integration check, Symfony closes the PR, completely trashes the Git branch, and starts fresh.
Wait, just burns it to the ground. Why delete all that work?
Because language models are notoriously bad at untangling their own architectural messes.
That's fair.
Yeah. If an agent goes down a bad path, having it try to refactor its own spaghetti code usually results in a way worse outcome. Trashing the branch forces the model to synthesize the new constraints and generate a clean implementation from scratch.
That makes sense. And what about AO?
AO, on the other hand, takes an incremental approach. If you leave a review comment on a PR generated by AO, it parses that comment, forwards it back to the agent, and keeps the agent working on the existing branch.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the agent attempts to fix the specific critique and pushes a new commit on top of the old ones. It feels much more like how human developers actually collaborate. I mean, you don't delete your coworker's branch just because they missed a null check.
Right. But what's the downside there?
The trade-off is that incremental systems like AO are much more susceptible to the agent getting stuck in local minima, endlessly tweaking a fundamentally flawed architecture. And then you have tools like T3 code, which operate on a completely different granularity. T3 is strictly human in the loop. It isn't trying to automate the whole PR lifecycle in the background on a server.
So what does it do?
Instead, it places approval gates on every single file edit. It provides visual diffs in a desktop application, and the human developer approves or rejects changes before they ever touch the local file system.
So T3 is like pair programming with a very fast junior developer sitting next to you, whereas Symfony is like delegating a massive project to an offshore team in another time zone and just waiting for the final deliverable.
That is exactly the dynamic.
Which brings up the massive headline we mentioned earlier. The 500% increase in PRs that OpenAI's internal teams reported during their beta.
Yeah, that throughput number has caused quite a stir across the industry. Everyone wants a 500% boost.
Naturally.
But there's a massive caveat that engineering teams need to understand before they try to deploy this architecture and expect a 5x multiplier on their output.
Because if a team doesn't have perfect hermetic tests, if their test suite is a bit flaky, which, let's be honest, is the reality for 90% of the industry, aren't they just building a machine that generates and merges broken software at 500 times the normal speed?
That is the ultimate danger, yes. And it's exactly why Symfony requires absolute hermetic testing.
Define hermetic testing for us.
A hermetic test is completely self-contained and deterministic. It makes zero external network calls. It doesn't rely on a third-party staging database being available. Everything the test needs to run is mocked or spun up locally in a container.
Okay, so no flakiness.
None. Because if your repository relies on manual QA teams, or if your integration tests occasionally fail due to network latency and you just rerun them until they pass, Symfony will relentlessly merge broken regressions into your main branch.
Because its only metric for success is checking if the CI pipeline turned green. It has no intuition about whether the feature actually works for the user.
Exactly. Autonomous coding tools act as an intense magnifying glass on the underlying weaknesses of your CI/CD pipeline. If your continuous integration passes on bad code, the agent mathematically assumes the code is flawless.
It just trusts the tests.
Right. Symfony doesn't magically write perfect software. It just generates attempts incredibly fast. The throughput advantage disappears entirely if your human reviewers have to spend hours catching subtle logical bugs that your automated tests missed.
So harness engineering isn't just about giving the AI better tools. It's about forcing the human engineering team to write bulletproof deterministic tests.
Yeah.
It also fundamentally changes how teams deal with Git conflicts, doesn't it? Like, if you have 10 agents working on 10 different tickets simultaneously, how do you prevent them from overwriting each other's code?
Well, because Symfony agents work in those isolated, cloned work trees we discussed earlier, they won't step on each other's toes while they are actively typing. The local environment remains perfectly pristine.
Okay.
However, standard version control reality still applies. The merge conflicts are simply deferred to the pull request merge time. Symfony doesn't magically prevent two agents from touching the same file. It just ensures they can finish their isolated thoughts.
So when you try to land those 10 PRs into the main branch, human engineers still have to sit there and resolve the resulting Git conflicts.
Exactly. The human still has to untangle the merge.
Well, we've covered a massive amount of ground today. Let's bring it all together. What does this deep architectural shift mean for the listener? I think it's safe to say the era of the AI copilot, you know, the tool that just sits in your IDE and auto-completes a few lines of boilerplate syntax while you do the actual thinking, that era is ending.
It is. We are undoubtedly moving into the era of code orchestration. The fundamental job description of a software engineer is pivoting heavily right now.
In what way?
You are no longer primarily a syntax typist translating business requirements into loops and variables. You are becoming a systems orchestrator.
The day-to-day job is pivoting core, defining rigid architectural constraints, maintaining pristine, blazingly fast test suites, and writing incredibly specific tickets, like vague JIRA tickets, like fix the dashboard UI are going to instantly break these autonomous systems.
Oh, they'll fail immediately.
You have to write tickets with the precision of a compiler. You are defining the bounds of the sandbox, and the machine just fills it with sand.
And if you can master that level of precise specification, you unlock an entirely new way of building and distributing software. It leads to a concept that completely redefines open source. Ghost libraries.
Ghost libraries. Explain the mechanics of that. What is a ghost library?
So currently, we distribute software by packaging up thousands of lines of pre-written source code, right? That code has to account for every possible edge case, every operating system, and every environment the user might have.
Right, you get a massive node modules folder.
Exactly. But if we reach a point where agents can reliably reproduce complex systems from a high-fidelity specification, like the workflow w.md and the spec.md files we've discussed, we might stop distributing shared source code entirely.
Wait, so instead of a massive GitHub repository full of JavaScript or Python files, what are you actually downloading?
You distribute an intent document, a highly detailed spec.md file that outlines exactly what the library is supposed to do, the API endpoints it should expose, and the performance constraints it must meet.
Just a spec file.
Just the spec. You download the spec, and an agent sitting on your local machine dynamically compiles and generates the actual software. It custom tailors the implementation to your specific local environment, your specific CPU architecture, and your specific project dependencies in real time.
That's incredible.
The code itself becomes entirely disposable, generated just in time on the fly.
Which circles us right back to that dark factory we started with. Only now, you aren't just turning the lights off on the factory floor, you're tearing down the factory entirely. You just hand a blueprint to a swarm of invisible machines on your local laptop, and the product builds itself perfectly adapted to wherever it happens to be standing. It's a completely new paradigm for software engineering.
It really is, and it demands a completely different set of skills from the engineers running it.
And it is happening right now in production. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Kernel Panic. Until next time, keep your builds fast and your tests hermetic.